You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Do you love the Tabernacle Choir? This year, the choir's music is everywhere you are. Listen to your favorite choir songs and music and the spoken word anytime you want on Alexa by simply enabling the skill.
Alexa, play music in the spoken word.
Now playing music in the spoken word.
You can also download the Tabernacle Choir app, subscribe to the choir on YouTube, listen on Spotify, and have access to all their wonderful music. Happy listening.
Radio check.
Loud and clear.
KSL Sports and KSL Podcast present Mode Push, an American view of F1, starting now.
And stop. He's making cut with his Odyssey.
I'm gutted. I'm absolutely gutted.
I enjoyed this so much. Thank you.
Everybody, welcome on in. It's another edition of Mode Push right here. KSL Podcast, KSL Sports production brought to you every week by myself, Alex Curie, and Dan Jimenez in the house as usual. So, Dan, welcome to your race week, dude. I love not having the breaks between the races. It's just so much better to not have to figure out, all these dudes who are like sitting around waiting for these races to go. I'm just so excited that we can actually get to some racing just a few days after the U.S. Grand Prix. So we're on to Mexico.
Totally.
On to Mexico. So here we are, Mexican Grand Prix. Thoughts about this one? Well, first, let's wrap up some of the cost cap stupidity that's still going on here, I guess. What do we learn still? Is there going to be anything that comes of? Are there going to be constructors' points taken away? Is there going to be anything that we have to deal with this, or can we just please put this thing in the past? And I'm not saying that like some guy who wants – I don't care if Red Bull wins or loses. I'm not a Red Bull guy. I just want like some continuity in the sport. I know that people – hey, you don't want to cheat in sports, but where are we on the cost cap stuff so we can move on and hopefully get to the next round of stuff here in F1?
Yeah, everyone wants to just move on. Like, let's close this chapter and get on to the next thing because we're all just tired of getting strung out by it. So the news today was that Red Bull and the FIA have mutually agreed upon, hey, we're going to sign this paper that says that we were in breach. And they've surely pre-negotiated their penalty. And there was lots of footage last week of the FIA CEO, whose name I am going to get wrong, but he's the Saudi Arabian guy. He and Christian Horner were like spending a lot of time together in the paddock and having closed door meetings. So surely that was just a negotiation going on between those two. But they announced today that they've come to an agreement, and there's going to be, I think, the announcement of the penalty tomorrow. So at the first day of practice of the Mexican GP.
All right.
So we'll have that. But as far as penalties, they did confirm that there's going to be a financial penalty and a sporting penalty. The financial penalty, we'll see how much that is. The rumored spend was $1.8 million. So I don't know if it'll be a one-to-one penalty or 2-to-1 or who knows. They're kind of setting the precedent here. And then the sporting penalty is likely going to be that reduction in wind tunnel time. So probably not going to be, any surprises beyond that. And we'll all just move on. And hopefully the competitors won't, continue to, complain about it.
I know that we make a lot of the wind tunnel stuff, but like how much I'm trying to figure out what, if you're a Mercedes guy, if you're Lewis Hamilton, if you're Toto Wolff, you go, this is the worst thing ever. They had massive advantages. They got faster because of the extra money that they spent. They got a quarter of a second on us from the money that they spent,
certainly this season. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like they're going to roll that out. I know you're like, everybody wants to move on from this. Mercedes is like, we want to keep bringing this thing up. And I know they can't do much after this weekend, but I'm just wondering how much of it, like, is there going to be like a long-term like eye roll about like, is F1 taking a hit on this? Like PR wise, do you think, or is it just one of those things is like, hey, we're kind of chalking this up to first year stuff of hard cost caps and And maybe in years future, are we going to see like harder penalties? If this were to happen next year, would it be a more harsh penalty?
Yeah, I think that I hope that they, in their announcement tomorrow, that they actually get into the details of exactly where and by how much Red Bull went over, like decomposing that $1.8 million. Because, how much of it really was catering versus how much was it that like Red Bull reused parts from the previous season that they thought wouldn't get counted under the cap. But then like supposedly halfway through the season, F1 changed the rules. And so, Red Bull's kind of saying that there was a bit of a moving goalpost there that they got caught in. And I think that if it's minor like that, where it's just like auditors fighting over definitions of terms, then I think we all move on pretty quickly. And if you see something more egregious, like actual fraud of trying to hide numbers or hide salaries, then I think you're going to see bigger penalties in the future. But it seems like from the rumors that have been going around that this is a lot of just more kind of accounting stuff on who, what the FIA and what Red Bull were independent, each saying was going to be included or not in the cap that doesn't seem to have given them a performance advantage, I think.
All right, there's the boring bull stuff that we have to get through for this thing. So now we got the Mexican GP in front of us. From a racing standpoint, what anything happened in the world of like? I mean, I know after the US GP, you had the 10-second start stop, which turned into a 30-second penalty for Alonso to go from 7th down to 15th, and he's appealing that. Is there anything like? I mean, is he going to see anything from that? Like, do appeals really get overturned? I feel like that once they make their decision, I feel like the FIA and F1 kind of go, hey, we're going to stand by our marshal's decision. We're going to stand by the race director's decision just because we don't want to mess with any of that. Is there grounds for him really being reinstated or reinstalled as that P7 that he had at the end of the race?
Yeah, I think in this case there is. And the reason being that they – being the FIA or like the race stewards actually never showed that black and orange flag to Alpine during the race.
So they didn't show up on it because now they just show up on the steering wheel or the team goes, hey, you've been black and orange flag, dude. You gotta come back in.
Yeah. So they didn't do anything and say anything to Alpine about it until Haas submitted their complaint. And saying like, yo, like you guys have hit us for this stuff in the past. I guess Magnussen got hit with this two or three times last year. And so they reported it to the FIA, says, Alonso's out there driving without a rear view mirror, right side mirror. And Alpine is also saying that Haas submitted that complaint like 25 minutes too late. I guess there's some cutoff after the race that all those complaints have to be submitted. They're saying Haas submitted it late, plus they were never even officially shown the black and orange flag. And so that's why Alpine's pressing so hard to appeal this, that like, look, you guys are like breaking your own rule book by assessing this penalty. So I think in this case, like Alonso has a point, and I hope he wins out, because I do think it's unfair for them to not follow their own kind of set of rules on how these appeals are supposed to work. But it's boring hearing about appeals on appeals.
So I was looking into this because I actually went down a weird rabbit hole the other day. And I think there, I think that YouTube suggested, I know it's wild that it was based on the things that I already watched before. They're all, hey, buddy, you want to watch this thing about F1? And it was like the wildest black flags in the history of F1. And I was like, you know what? Of all the things that I've had in my short time in F1 in the last 4 or 5 seasons, I don't think I've seen a black flag in a race. And that's like seems like something that just came up all the time. So let's go through some of the flags. I haven't quizzed you prior to this, right?
I'll have a hard time knowing.
Then you better figure it out. We'll start off easy here. The yellow flag, Dan, what does the yellow flag usually indicate?
Oh, what do the flags mean? Oh, yeah, that is caution. Yeah, safety
caution,
car.
Okay. The yellow and red striped flag. Now, this one's wild. I've never seen this one before.
Yellow and red striped. I don't know that one.
Listen, it's a wild one. Slippery track due to oil, water, or loose debris, which I'm like, well, come on. We've had that. We've seen that before. I haven't seen the red and white line, but this is the best part. It also, if it's rocked from side to side and not waved, it indicates that there's a small animal on the track.
So okay. There's well, let's definitely do not put Tim Cook in charge of that.
No, it would be good for him to do the rocking back and forth. Like, don't wave it. Just, like, barely move your arm. I want you to look like a robot waving that thing on the side.
If it looks like Tim Cook's waving the flag, it means small animal.
Okay, green flag. Easy one here.
Yeah. Go, go, go. Lights out.
Let's get going. Blue flag. This is one we see, you know, periodically, pretty much every race.
This is like Latifi, get out of the way because Verstappen's coming through.
It's only for Latifi. In years past, we just called it the Williams flag until more recently. This one, the white flag. Now, this one's, I feel like you see it on the driver's steering wheel sometimes. I don't think I've ever seen it wave, though, or maybe flash.
Yeah, I one lap to go, right?
I thought the same thing, because that's what it is in our American style.
It's what an oval racing. Yeah.
Right. This is usually just used during the free practices. And it's when when drivers are doing practice starts, there's a slow-moving vehicle ahead, okay? So right now, I can't give you any super license points at this particular point, but we'll just keep going for the reps. Red flag.
Yeah, stop the race.
Whole thing stops. Everybody comes into the pits, either to bad weather or dangerous situations going on. They even said our spectators on the track. I thought, geez.
Oh, okay.
Black flag is when a driver is what?
Just they're in trouble. They got to pull in because they're not following, you know, a warning or they're not safe out there.
The black flag is an immediate disqualification. So when that driver gets a black flag, they're disqualified. And what's interesting is I watched a lot of these black flags, and Michael Schumacher was not incident free in his career of getting a black flag. He and Nigel Mansell both, who are both former world champions. Nigel Mansell rocks the original wild eyebrows and mustache, you know, one of the classic, British drivers in British driving history. They both, at one point in their careers, ignored black flags and just finished the race instead.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's that part where they go, hey, you need to come in. But what are you going to tell a guy who's driving 200 miles an hour? You can't shoot his tires out. So the black and orange flag is, we just discussed this, what is it?
It's a there's safety hazard with your car. You got to bring it in and address it.
It's a mechanical or damaged issue. And that's interesting. And they even said, the flag is accompanied by the driver's race number. So that even makes me think more. If they weren't shown the flag and they weren't, like, told specifically, because I think when we were watching the race, they discussed the damage. You know, when you're watching the commentary, they discussed the damage. But no, I don't remember hearing them even talking about a black and orange flag. But maybe
– No, I'm sure, maybe I'm sure they would have.
Yeah. The white and – the half black, half white flag.
Half black, half white?
Yes, not to be confused with checkered, but half black, half white.
I don't know.
Yeah, this one is a warning for unsportsmanlike behavior. It's a 15-yard penalty.
Okay, yeah. It's like a black flag warning.
It's like
an
almost you're about to get it. And then of course the checkered flag is the finish of the old race. So there you go.
Oh, do they also give them a black? They give them a black and white flag when they go over outside of like the track limits. I think they say that on the broadcast.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think sometimes when they show the drivers in the cockpit. You see them, and I think it's fascinating because whatever warning that they are usually given or whatever thing is happening, if the safety car comes out, you have that SC on the wheel. But all the flags that they've been issued technically would show up on that steering wheel
display.
Their display. And the black and white flag I've definitely seen because when they go, hey, and even this last race, how many times was Lewis, you know, saying, hey, man, he went over the track limits at turn 20, turn 7. Like he was like giving a play by play of Max's violation. But now
there was one that I saw,
two or three strikes, right? No, that's what they were doing. They just kept going.
What did you see? Everyone got three strikes. But I did see that someone called out that Lewis reported that Sergio Perez had gone wide in turn whatever. And Sergio was behind him. And so Lewis saw it on a screen as he was passing, was literally watching the TV and said, I just saw Sergio go wide. Wow. And I like, what a lunatic. Hey,
was he right though? Was he right? Yes.
I don't know.
He's the world champ. I mean, it's okay. They look at the screen. It's like when the guy's running in for a touchdown and he's looking to see if anybody's behind him up on the big screen. True. It's helpful. So you might as well do it. And if there's somebody who can do it, Heck, you could probably let that guy text and drive, you know, at this point.
Yeah.
Lewis could be.
They're doing a lot more than text and moving all those buttons around already.
I can't believe when they're like, move to Strat 3. I'm like, what on earth is going on at this point?
Yeah.
I love after the race, they almost don't even celebrate. They're like, oh, Max, you're the world champion. Set to Strat 4 and then move over to position 7. Watch your battery, you know, and you're like,
yeah,
come on. Please, yeah. I know you're an engineer all the time, but settle down. I don't think the car is going to die in this half lap here. All right, Mexican Grand Prix. I mean, look, I want Checo to win this thing. I want Checo to win. I want Mexico to be exciting. I want him to pull ahead of Charles in the last couple races here so that there's that little second, third place fight. Plus, I just love when guys win their home Grand Prix, and I can't imagine a group – maybe more insane, well, the Dutch, but then Mexico and the Mexicans for their guy Checo. Like, I mean, this dude gets more fans in Mexico, obviously, because of the Mexican draw, but like his dad is like a likable figure. He's got a big old smile on his face. I don't know. Am I singular in this, just thinking I want to see Checo win this thing because Max has done everything else this year?
No, I think that's it. All eyes are on Checo this week, and he, you know, knows that. It would be super cool to see him win this race, and I think that the Mexico capital would mm-hmm. just like maybe get burned to the ground. They'd be so excited. It's going to be crazy. So I think that it's going to be a competitive race. So doing a little bit more research and reminding myself last week when we were talking about it, I had mentioned like, oh, you know, the way the track is built out, it's a low downforce track. But I forgot that Mexico City is at like 7,000 feet elevation.
What does that and do? What does that do for the performance of the car?
Yeah, so it's a lot thinner. The air is a lot thinner. And so the car is creating less natural downforce. And so you can run a more high downforce configuration to achieve the same amount of downforce that you would get at like sea level. But what that does is that's going to minimize the advantage that Red Bull has over everybody else. So Mercedes, like Toto Wolff was quoted saying that they think they're going to be a lot more competitive this week because the W13 has been notoriously like draggy this year, and they know they have to address that for next year. But in the thin air, it's almost like everybody's racing in a vacuum. So it's all kind of everybody's on equal footing. So I looked at Mercedes to be a lot faster. They had a pretty wide top speed differential to the other teams in Austin, but that should close up this week in Mexico City.
You did the homework and you looked into some of this stuff. You're our engineer on staff. And so what else mm-hmm. have you found out engineering wise that we need to know about this week?
So I looked into the regulation changes for next year, for 2023. Obviously, they're going to be a lot fewer than what we had in 2022. Yeah,
intense, full-on car change last year.
Right.
Now it's just going to be like, I mean, dialing up some things, right? I mean, what do we
Yeah, refinements. Exactly, yeah. So, you know, the big one that people talk about the most is that they're increasing the height of the floor. So, like, the floor on an F1 car is kind of like a difficult concept to understand. Like, yes, it's the floor is like the underbody, underside of the car, like the part that would like hit the road as it porpoises. But like there's also a top side to the floor. Like the space between the side pods and the rear tires is like this, you know, just almost like a wing with lots of different aero elements built into it to direct the air. So it's very like super important part of the car. I think the floor generates more downforce than either the front wing or the rear wing. And so for next year, they're increasing the height of the floor on the outer edge by 15 millimeters, which does not sound like a lot. But what that's going to do is just increasing the height of that floor means less chance for the car to stall out and get like the varying negative positive pressures that cause porpoising. So that I think is done in an effort to reduce porpoising next year. And they're also making that floor stiffer so it can't deflect as much under load. So that's going to be the biggest change. So what I think that does is it probably puts more of the teams on kind of equal grounds because they're all going to be racing at a little bit higher ride height. Some of the other changes are they're strengthening the roll hoop for all the cars based on Zhou Guanyu's crash at the British Grand Prix. If you remember, he like got flipped upside down and skidded on top of his halo for a while.
What was the because in the end it was like, man, the halo saved his life. But is it just to be like, hey, just in case, because that was wild? Or is it more like they actually found something after the crash that they were like, ooh, this didn't hold up nearly as well as we thought it would?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I remember seeing pictures that looked like it just had gotten sanded down. And like if he had slid, you know, if that had happened 100 meters sooner, maybe it would have failed before, you know, his car flipped itself back over.
So do they make it thicker, or do they do like a thing where the alloy just is even more like intensely titanium, or I don't even know what it's totally made of.
Yeah, it's all carbon fiber, but yeah, they said that it needs to be less or more abrasion resistant. I honestly don't know how they're going to do that. I'm sure it'll be something to do with the coating of whatever that carbon fiber is painted with.
It's PAM.
And then, strengthening it or thickening it.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. But they're going to strengthen it too so that it can carry more, like, I guess they've never really kind of considered like in a roll, like how much force would it hit the top of that halo, you know, as you go upside down. So they're increasing the strength in that direction. So that's good for safety. Another safety thing is that they're increasing the size of the side mirrors. And that's not just to help the driver see where George Russell is. Like that's going to help with all the blind spot stuff. And that'll be, you know, I think helpful for racing. What else? They're going to be more adjustability in the front wing. Everything else is pretty minimal. Oh, one thing is they're dropping the weight of the car by 2 kilograms. So 796 is going to be the new minimum. And they are now requiring every driver to have that visor camera that we all love so much. So that's going to be standard for every driver now.
We call it the shaky Leclerc. Yeah, the one that was like, everyone's like, oh, what a view. I'm like, that makes me sick watching that. But whatever. I guess they're probably like less from a standpoint of entertainment. That's probably secondary compared to being able to see what they see in the cockpit, et cetera, to be able to probably investigate later. That's why I think that they do most of this type of stuff.
Yeah, there's probably that dual purpose. I mean, fans seem to love it. And, you know, anytime there's, you know, a crash like the Alonso Stroll one, you know, seeing like what did Lando actually see when he went through that cloud of smoke, that is definitely like eye-catching.
All right, so the Mexico Grand Prix comes up. There's also the part where, you know, Max could secure the 14th and record-setting win for the season. Is that something? Do you think that the team, speaking of team orders, I know they would never tell Max to not try to win a race, but at the same time, he's already the world champ. They're already the constructors' champions. Is there any version in F1 of being like, hey, man, you go win this race and I'll You've defended for me before. Let me go out there and sit back here and fight off some of these dudes, and we'll let you win your home Grand Prix.
Yeah, I think so. I think that each of those Red Bull engineers are going to approach the race strategy, you know, however best fits their driver. And then as they get into the race, if there's going to be a decision that needs to be made on like who to pit first and, you know, the trade-off, you could see, you know, Christian Horner making the call of like, hey guys, we're going to prioritize Sergio this race. And maybe that conversation's had before with Max. And I think that like Max will have, you know, two more opportunities after Mexico to get that 14th win, which I do think is significant. And I think he personally will want it. And so I don't see Max like laying over or pulling over for Sergio, but if Max finds himself in a position where it's maybe a toss up between the two, then I think he's the kind of guy, kind of teammate for, you know, Sergio's done so much for him that I could see him, you know, doing a favor for Checo to help him get a win in his home Grand Prix.
Chalk that up for like again, stuff that sometimes I can't understand about racing, about motorsport, where you're like, so they're teammates, but – and then there's the part where they don't act like teammates, and then some weeks they do. And so that's the part that's always always interesting to me here. The rest of the way through, again, I think we've talked about this a couple times, but in this race, who do you see as a dark horse possible winner of this thing that I think Lewis Hamilton came out this week and said, yeah, I don't see us winning any races this year. Now, that's despite the fact that they've kind of made a little bit of progress, and they were in that fight until, you know, the last 10 or 12 laps in that last race. I feel like there's a little bit of Lewis that sandbags and kind of just goes, yeah, we'll see. I don't think we'll win. Do you think Mercedes really will get through the rest of the year here and not get a W? I mean, it's insane to think. If you travel back in time and say, yeah, and they're not going to even win a race in 2022, that seems wild.
I feel like this race is their best chance to get one before the end of the season. So if it doesn't happen here, it probably doesn't happen. But I do think that they have a good chance of being really competitive. But it's probably going to require something to happen to Max, and then it being more of like a head-to-head with Sergio, I think. But I think the chances are definitely there. If I had to put my money on somebody other than Max, I probably would choose Lewis for this race.
Not Ferrari. Not the Ferrari drivers. They're out. They're going to somehow take themselves out of this race. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. 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 Karma, I think, is just too hard. And not to say that they're deserving of it, but no. I just think that like something's going on. If they didn't have, you know, bad luck, they wouldn't have any at all.
Okay. Other teams or other drivers that you think we should have an eye on this weekend that would be like, hey, they might have a nice drive here as we do the farewell tour to Nicholas Latifi and Sebastian Vettel. Who else is going to be out of F1 after this year? I'm trying to think. And do we have any updated news on Logan Sargeant? Is it kind of a done deal that if he's going to end up having enough super license points to be driving for? Was it Williams next year? Is that what it's going to be?
For Williams, yeah. It'll be decided in Abu Dhabi. And so the F2 race that weekend, everyone will have to watch. And hopefully they looks like normally they air the F2 races on like ESPN3 or ESPN The Ocho or one of these online ones.
Sure.
And so it'd be cool if they put it on like ESPN2 or ESPN News or something, because I feel like there's going to be a lot of Americans interested to see how he finishes. But he's like got to finish fifth in standings and he's in third. So it's like pretty good chance, as long as he finishes, that he will have enough super license points. So as far as other drivers for this weekend, I think Sebastian Vettel, I mean, if you think that, you know, Mercedes themselves are going to be faster in the high altitude, then I think Aston Martin will as well. And they were, you know, pretty quick in the last race in Texas. So I'd love to see Sebastian Vettel just kind of continue with like that fire in his belly to get a podium before the end of the year.
Hey, yo, you've got an American Express card. I've got an American Express card. And I'll tell you what, I mean, listen, I always hate paying that fee every year, but at the same time, it's starting to pay off because I think we can start buying tickets are they just calling it the Las Vegas Grand Prix? What are they calling it?
Las Vegas Grand Prix. Yeah.
I think, listen, tickets go on sale for Amex holders on November 1. So that's next Tuesday. I mean, we're going to be. Now, but here's
Tuesday,
they're requiring
11 a.m. our time.
Yes, they're requiring a 3-day pass purchase, right? Isn't that what they're saying after this?
Yeah.
Good
so
job.
You gotta buy all three days.
Good job, Vegas. Appreciate you. I was looking at ticket prices, and this weekend in Mexico's insane.
What was it?
I think the ones that I saw maybe a grandstand 2-day pass. Saturday, Sunday. I thought that's something that that would be interesting. If I didn't make it to the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, fine. Make it to Saturday. Quali and the race, amazing. General admission, and it was between $850 and $950. You know, you had other ones that were the high, like in the, you know, the higher bracket of being able to sit maybe. But these were like, they were showing you, and I was like, oh, that's a pretty good little seat right there, and that's fine. So between $800 and $900. If you wanted to go to Abu Dhabi, though, that's only like $450 for the same pass. And you could even do a one-day pass for like $300 on the race day. And I thought, I guess it's because people have a little bit of a harder time maybe making that flight over. But I thought it would have been reverse.
Yeah.
I thought it would have been more expensive in Abu Dhabi than it would be. And maybe as they get closer to race time, like a lot of other, you know, tickets, it kind of gets that way. But I don't know. I can't imagine things are going to be – I mean, I'm going to have to start going – hey, honey, let's roll next year's anniversary, this birthday, and another anniversary gift. all into one for me on this next one, just so I can go to this. Just like, as I'm assuming we're going to be Dan footing the bill at least 1K,
yeah,
at least $1,100 to try to probably. And then there's the part where we have to figure out where to stay, because then that's the part too that I feel like is going to be an insane thing. And you don't want to be that guy who goes and you're like, we're staying in Henderson, and then we're going to walk to the race. It's like, come on, man, if we're going to go,
gotta experience it.
Yes, we got to go do it.
For what it's worth, when I saw that, like, the pre-sale, you know, is coming next Tuesday, I think said something across the room to my wife. She kind of looked at me, and even though she didn't say it, I could feel that she was, yes, like, you know, you don't want to hear what I want to say, 'cause I know you're going to do it anyways. And so that was like a nonverbal approval. So see, I think I'm good to go.
But you notice that I haven't even brought it up yet. So I'm like, planning it out loud with you in my head, and what I'm going to do is go, oh, I already talked about it on the podcast, so it looks like something
happening.
Dan invited
it. It says here on the Amex website, prices starting at $500 per ticket. Okay. I don't know if that's per day, but I guess we'll find out on Tuesday.
So on the general admission too, there are on the general tickets, I think you can start buying them November 5th, and then that's like I think you can buy eight as a max, but the Amex ones, you can only buy two. And so I think, I think probably worth it to be able to get, because by November 5th, who friggin' knows what's going on? Who are the people who've been able to get them and put them on the secondary market as it is?
Man, even if you just kind of hold on to them and then resell them next October, if you can't make it, like, you're going to make a profit, yes, if you can get in on that Amex sale. So to all of our listeners out there who have an Amex card, capitalize on this. If you don't have an Amex card, hurry up and sign up and get one. And I think there's a chance to arbitrage this.
Oh yeah, it's worth the $195, you know, annual fee if you're going to be able. You'll make that up in just the resale, at least of a ticket like that. Hey, on one more note here, I saw this back and forth between Martin Brundle and Will Buxton. Martin Brundle does the commentary, of course, for F1. I think Will Buxton is like a Liberty employee, or I don't know who he's employed.
He's on F1 TV.
Yes,
I think. So
maybe
so
he's an F1 employee. Maybe Martin Brundle is the Liberty
guy. Sky Sports.
He's
Sky.
Okay, so he and Crofty are the ones who do. Typically, you hear his voice more often than not in the analyst role. Up in the booth, and he does the grid walk that everybody watches, and he awkwardly goes through, and half the time the people who are talking to him, especially at the U.S. Grand Prix, people have no idea who Martin Brundle is. So if Shaq gets approached by Martin Brundle, maybe actually Shaq would know, but he approached a bunch of celebrities, and half of them don't know who he is. He went up to Brad Pitt, and Brad Pitt's people were like, shoo. Brad Pitt's like, thank you so much, and he's like asking him questions. He's like, hey, get out of here. And I think most of the time it's because they don't want to answer questions, because I don't know if they know that much about the race. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe Brad Pitt does. But Will Buxton went back and forth with Martin Brundle. Martin Brundle accused him of lying because he said, hey, we get a list of these celebs who don't want to be spoken to. And Brad Pitt was on that list, and Martin Brundle still walked up to him. And so when he didn't get that, people think Brad Pitt's a douche for not answering. But the guy walked up and he wasn't supposed to talk to him. And Martin Brundle's like, that is absolutely not true. Maybe you get a list, but we don't. I'm going up and doing my job, bro. And Will Buxton is not a former F1 driver. And Martin Brundle is, and I feel like carries a little bit more weight around there. So he hightailed into apology land, I think. And so,
it was pretty funny, yeah. And I think a lot of people like replied back to Will Buxton saying, like I've never gotten that list. And like, it was pretty clear, like it became clear very quickly that like maybe Will Buxton's the only one that gets handed a list that says don't talk to these people.
They're
maybe
like,
that's
actually
more of a reflection on Will Buxton than anybody else.
The list actually says for Will Buxton, please don't approach these people.
Please don't talk to these people.
At the same time, like, why would you want DJ Khaled weighing in? Do you think DJ Khaled would freaking have any input on this thing except for like, yo, I'm glad to be here? So people made a lot of good points. They're like, why do these celebrities even get on the grid and walk around when they've never even watched a race? They're just there for the for the glitz of it, I'm like, yeah, yeah. There's a point to this. These guys, half of these celebrities who are there are like, I heard this was an event, and so I'm here. I think it's probably a snapshot of what we're going to get at the All-Star game next year here in Salt Lake City for the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah, good point.
My heavens. All right. I think we did it. Dan, let's wrap this thing up. We've got races to get to, FP1 starting on Friday, and then qualifying on Saturday, and then this isn't one of those special races that we have we don't have a sprint race until Brazil.
Brazil, I think. Yeah.
Last one of the year is the Brazilian one. So there it is. Another week in the books. For Dan, I'm Alex. We appreciate you joining us every week. Dan, hang in, dude. You got to get well before Las Vegas next year, okay? Just make sure that you're there.
Let's do it. Hey, let's get a Lewis win this weekend, and I'll feel better.
There you go. Now suddenly he's back on Mercedes AMG. Big fan. Little bandwagon jumper between Ferrari and Mercedes. All right, for Dan, I'm Alex. We'll talk to you next time. Post race on Sunday, we'll get the breakdown for you for your Monday commute. We'll see you then, everybody.